back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Today we have not as much recap as I would normally do of the last couple games. I would say we didn't have an episode talking about the Kansas State game yet. And the Oklahoma State game, well, there's a decent amount we could talk about. There's nothing really, you know, vital that we talk about today. Instead, I was able to get Melissa Treewasser from Frogs of War on the podcast to go ahead and help us preview the pretty big game that we have tonight going up against TCU, down in TCU. So without any further ado, I'm going to go ahead and get you on over to that interview right now.
And I'm joined now by Melissa Treewasser, who is over at Frogs of War, the SB Nation site that covers the TCU Horned Frogs. Melissa, how are you doing today?
I am doing well. Still riding high off of a couple of big wins last week and looking forward to having ESPN on campus Monday night for Big Monday. It's a good week to be a TCU basketball fan.
Yeah, I have to say, this isn't your guys' first experience having Big Monday on campus, is it?
No, we for the West Virginia game last year, which was a top, they came in as a top 10 team. My, how the times have changed for our four Mountaineer friends.
Yeah, that was
the first time in history that Big Monday had been to TCU, and it was a pretty amazing experience for somebody who has followed this program for a long time to see just how far TCU basketball has come and what an impact that Dami Dixon has had on it, to see the way that that place was packed. There were scalpers everywhere outside. I mean, you had to park an hour early to get a spot. It must be what going to a regular season Kansas basketball game is like, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's, well, especially a regular season Kansas basketball game and like in Manhattan or some other place where they don't usually sell out very well. You know, I mean, in early years of TCU in the Big 12, you know, there were people saying that you guys didn't have a lot of support there, but ever since you guys opened up the new arena, it's been packed from what I can tell. Or maybe not every single game, but definitely a lot more often than some of the people in the conference that, you know, you would expect to actually fill a stadium a lot more often.
Yeah. I think it's still a work in progress. The students have been pretty good, pretty consistent for the most part. You know, we still have the issue with most of our TCU fans over the last 10, 15 years have really been community fans. A lot of them are people who went to school at OU or Kansas or Texas Tech, and you know, nobody wants to live in Lubbock or Stillwater or something, and so they end up moving down to DFW and adopted TCU as their second team before joining the Big 12. Basketball was a slower buy-in in that regard because we have been so just horrible prior to Jamie Dixon's arrival. So I think people are starting to kind of understand what it takes to be a real actual basketball fan. It's getting better for the big games, for the big name matchups. I mean, the place is absolutely rocking. For some of the, you know, the less sexy matchups, or if the Frogs lose a couple games in a row, it takes a while to kind of get the fans back involved. But I think that it's something that Dixon has been really aware of and has really focused energy on. And the TCU marketing department and the athletics department, they're really good at kind of building hype in that arena. So I've been impressed for the most part with what the fans have done compared to what I expected them to do. But I don't think we're quite to the point to where the, you know, TCU plays in one of the toughest places to play in the conference. I do think it's possible to be that school, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. Especially at least, you know, one of the toughest places to play down in the state of Texas. I mean,
for sure.
Being in Texas, it's always going to be hard to get as much excitement around a basketball program as there is around a football program, just because of the way, you know, that's just the way that Texas is. But
exactly.
You know, I definitely know you guys don't have the same problems that like the Longhorns do, in terms of, it just seems like nobody really seems to care about that team unless they're winning a championship.
Yep.
Which, I mean, the only year that they really seemed to have big crowds there was when Kevin Durant was down there. And so,
yeah.
I mean, I haven't seen that problem. And honestly, you know, Trent Johnson seemed to have things going somewhat in the right direction, just unfortunately didn't seem to have the talent there. And it was going to take a little bit longer, I think, to get the buy-in. But bringing a guy like Jamie Dixon back to TCU really seemed to energize the fan base. You guys have definitely been doing a lot better, you know, than I necessarily would have thought, given the trajectory you guys had before. Now,
absolutely.
I mean, obviously, Jamie Dixon is a very high-quality coach as well. It's hard to pick who the quote-unquote worst coach in the Big 12 is right now at this point.
Yeah, it's pretty loaded.
I mean, Mike Boynton probably is higher on that list of, you know, quote-unquote worst, only because he hasn't really had a good opportunity to prove himself, because he is a fairly new coach. You know, and then there's people that will talk about a guy like Scott Drew or Bruce Weber, mainly because they seem to have problems with high-profile games and things like that. But, you know, if those are the worst coaches you have in your conference is stacked with coaching talent.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I think Boynton is a guy who next year with the guys that they have coming in, Oklahoma State's not going to get worse. They're only going to continue to get better. I mean, what's happened to them this season is such an anomaly when you look at, you know, removing three scholarship players, including two starters. And Scott Drew, you know, as much as I obviously hate all things Baylor, it's hard not to respect what he's built. The Ferrell Center is probably the worst facility in the conference, and he continues to make that a destination. I mean, watching TCU lose by 30 points last Saturday night, which feels like a lifetime ago, in that place, and how loud it was and how into it the fans were. That's a program that maybe hasn't quite been able to get over the hump when it comes to large scale success in March. But man, they're a tough out. They are really, really tough out until it comes to tournament time. And that's not a place that I think many Big 12 teams enjoy playing. Plus, he just keeps recruiting guys that have no business going to Waco. So we won't get into the details of that. But but yeah, I mean, there's no nights off. There's no easy wins in this league. And I know we've been saying that for years and years. And even as Kansas has dominated when it comes to actually winning titles and tournaments, you know, I don't think that things have gotten any easier for other Big 12 contenders, and it looks like that's not going to change anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, I think this is kind of the year where people actually finally start to believe that. We as Big 12 people have been saying that forever, but
sure.
Nationally, you know, the fact that sure, Kansas has found itself in some tough spots in a few cases, but you know, typically they win the game or win the league by at least a couple games. And so everybody immediately says, oh, well, I guess the league wasn't that tough if, you know, Kansas can win by multiple games. But this year, I'm seeing probably a split title, or, you know, if someone does win it outright, it's only going to be by a single game. There's a lot of teams that are really tough outs. We're seeing time and time again, you know, lots of different results that make absolutely no sense when you try to take, you know, look at all of them together. So,
oh yeah, I mean, I just have to look back to Saturday afternoon and seeing what TCU did at Iowa State, which was like number 13 in KenPom, and this TCU team that's been decimated with the flu and injuries and transfers can go into a place where they historically have not been able to win at all, when Iowa State's been at least competitive, and really just put it on the Cyclones, the biggest anomaly so far of the season for the Horned Frogs, for sure.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, looking at that game a little bit, I mean, I'm also, it seems like the game that we played at the beginning of conference schedule, you know, when TCU came to Lawrence, like, seems forever ago, because these teams look completely different. Obviously, Kansas, because of a lot of injuries, and TCU, I think they've kind of come into their own at this point. But you know, looking just at the box score, it was a fairly balanced attack from you guys. Desmond Bain. I'm really bad with these names. Alex Robinson and then Kwait Noy. Is that how you say it? Kwait Noy.
Yeah.
Okay, I was close. all had 17 points. Scoring was obviously led by Kendrick Davis, who had 22. But, you know, it seems like a very balanced attack of the top four guys. What has really been the driving success for this team, though, in the games that they've won this year?
Well, for TCU to win, a couple of things have to happen. Number one, they have to be locked in defensively. And for the most part, they have been. But at times, they've looked really tired just due to kind of short rotations. And Dixon hasn't quite figured out what to do with guys like Lat Mayen and RJ Nemhard. Davis obviously has found his role. And I think now that he's consistently kind of had a place in the rotation, we saw him just confidently explode against the Cyclones. He's a tough matchup. He's small. He gets his shot blocked a lot going up to the rim, but that dude is just dynamic, and he just changes the energy on the court. And so, you know, that just starts kind of the firepower for the Frogs. Yesterday they were really effective, Saturday they were really effective because it started on the defensive end with deflections, with tip balls, with big rebounds, and they were able to get out and run. And when TCU gets out and run, they're really, really hard to contain. They're a long, athletic, fast team with some powerful finishers at the rim, and so that's where their biggest advantage is. But for me, you know, what this all starts with is Alex Robinson and Desmond Bain. We saw a stretch where TCU really struggled offensively, and it was because teams were able to keep Robinson out of the paint, or they were able to turn him over when he got down in there. And when he is able to penetrate and find open players, open teammates in the key, TCU's offense is almost impossible to stop with the amount of shooters that they have and the versatility. When teams can collapse on him and get him in the air before he knows where he's going with the ball, then the Frogs are really just not very efficient whatsoever. Those are the games where they're scoring, you know, in the 40s and 50s and 60s and just kind of look to be completely unkempt on the offensive side of the ball. So he was able to make some things happen against an Iowa State defense that's usually pretty solid. And against Oklahoma State, they really didn't have an answer for him whatsoever. So it'll be interesting to see how Kansas makes that adjustment. And then the last thing is Desmond Bain. This is a guy who should be a top two or three scorer in the conference, period. He can do it from outside. He can penetrate. He can attack. He can finish. He's an explosive dunker. I mean, he has all of the tools to be an outstanding player of the year type scorer on the offensive side of the ball for TCU. He just doesn't seem to be an alpha dog when it comes to the mentality. He is an unselfish player almost to a fault. He's a guy that wants to get everybody involved. He doesn't lack for confidence whatsoever. He kind of picks his spots and waits for the game to come to him. And with a guy like that, you almost have to say, no, man, you got to go get things rolling. And so when the Frogs just got just humiliated at Texas Tech and at Baylor, he didn't score a single point in the first half. And mind you, he had the flu, so that has something to do with it. But he came out against Oklahoma State and he was looking to score, and he hit five threes in the first half and was, you know, just looking for his shot every opportunity. And that completely changed things for TCU. And more of the same against Iowa State. And all of a sudden now you've got an extra guy you've got to pay attention to. The offense or the defense rotates over. You've created more lanes for Alex Robinson to do his thing. You've opened up more looks for Quatnoy from outside. And now you have an offense that is that 80-point-a-game offense that was leading the Big 12 in scoring up until 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. I mean, Desmond Bain, he reminds me a lot, because I was watching that game against Iowa State. Obviously, I was very, very interested given the opportunity that Kansas had to kind of claw a game back in the standings. Bain reminds me a lot of, you know, some of the players we've had at Kansas who are extremely talented and just didn't have that, I guess, that killer instinct of terms mm-hmm. of picking the game on their own shoulders. A guy like Frank Mason in his, you know, sophomore year or something like that, you could tell he was mm-hmm. talented. You could tell that he could make the play if he decided he wanted to. And it was really the back half of his junior year and that senior year where he just all of a sudden said, look, I've got to go ahead and do this. I'm going to go ahead and make things happen. And Desmond Bain has all the same hallmarks of a guy that could do that sort of thing. He just needs to finally decide that that's what he's going to do to actually make it happen. So
yeah, and you know, we're right at that turning point too. This is the back half of his junior year. You know, this is going to be his team next year. He's going to be, I believe he's the lone junior now on the team because of all the transfers. So this really comes down to what he's going to be as a senior. And I think that if he continues to develop that mental, I love the Frank Mason comparison. I think that that's really, really apt. Plus, I'm a Sacramento Kings fan, so ergo, I am now a Frank Mason fan.
You being a Sacramento Kings fan.
Hey, I'm not sorry right now, man. I've been sorry for about the last 15 years, but right now I'm feeling pretty good about the direction of the franchise.
Sacramento Kings kind of reminds me of me being a Royals fan, you know, for the longest time. Bad, and then there's a little bit of glimmer of hope. So hopefully it works out for you guys.
Yeah.
Especially with a good guy like Frank.
It was a good trade deadline. That's not something I've been able to say for like 12
true,
years. So I feel good. But anyways, all that to say, if Bain decides that he's going to be the leading scorer on this team for the next 10 games or whatever it is, all of a sudden TCU looks to be in a much, much better spot than we felt like even a week ago. So he's a guy that has NBA potential. I mean, he's, you know, 6'5", 6'6", he can shoot, he can drive, he's a great defender, he's an incredible rebounder for a shooting guard. I mean, he really, when he's had games where he's had double-digit rebounds in the first half. I mean, he can really do it all, but he's got to show teams that he has that killer mentality and that he's willing to take over. So this is his opportunity to prove it. Let's hope he doesn't prove it too well in the next, you know, 3 weeks or so and decide to go pro. But I think you could be looking at a, you know, an all-conference player next year if he keeps up this trajectory.
Yeah, so obviously we've talked a lot about what the strengths of this team are. What are the weaknesses that maybe that Kansas can actually try to take advantage of in this game?
Well, you know, like I said, if you can shut down Alex Robinson, if you can make him be a scorer, or you can keep him, you know, playing mostly behind the 3-point line, TC hasn't quite found another ball handler that can take some of the pressure off of him and help alleviate that. Now, maybe Kendrick Davis, maybe this is the start of something. The last two games has started to show him kind of climbing up and his ability to be a traditional point guard. Maybe he can do more of that against Kansas Monday night. Outside of that, you know, if TCU's not hitting shots, that definitely dictates their defensive intensity because they're still, you know, 19 and 20 year old kids. If they come out and they, you know, they're 0 for 7 from 3-point land, they tend to dig themselves in a little bit of a hole. They have trouble digging out of that. Kevin Samuel turned a corner yesterday against Iowa State. He dominated. He protected the rim. He was a great rebounder. And the biggest thing for him was he stayed out of foul trouble. And with the Frogs so low in depth right now, they burned the red shirt of Russell Barlow, who was a guy who really needed a red shirt year. But he's right now backing up Samuel. And he's just not quite ready for those big moments. All the potential in the world, but was being redshirted for a reason. We'll say it like that. But if you can get Samuel into foul trouble, if you can get him leaving his feet, that completely changes, you know, the defensive intensity of TCU and the depth. I mean, depth is a huge issue for this team. If you look at losing guys like Caden Archie, who was a really nice rotational piece, especially on the defensive side, you lose Jalen Fisher, which is a massive, massive loss. And now you look at, you know, is RJ Nembhard had that really great game against Kansas the first time that we played, but hasn't done a whole lot since. And Latman is still kind of fighting through some injuries and doesn't look to be 100%. So you're really your only consistent bench player right now is Kendrick Davis. And that can be that can spell doom when you get into this part of the season where you're playing two games in 3 days and you're going to be doing a lot of that for the next couple of weeks. So unless RJ or Lat can really kind of step in and find their groove on both sides of the ball, that does become concerning for the Frogs down the stretch. And it's something I think Kansas can definitely take advantage of if they want to get out and run a little bit and try to wear TCU down.
Yeah, I'm also wondering, though, how well Kansas will actually be able to do that, because for all the depth they were supposed to have coming into the year, you know, obviously they're down four players right now because of injuries or other issues. But honestly, I mean, they're down to 8 scholarship players, but only about 5 of those have actually been able to consistently perform at this point. So, you know, they had a really good game against Oklahoma State where they were able to actually go ahead and get some good minutes from the bench guys. But that, you know, I think part of that might have to do with the fact that it was Oklahoma State and they were at home. So, you know, there's a lot of question there whether that's going to carry over, especially onto the road. So I'm looking at the KenPom team sheet for TCU, and really the only thing that jumps out to me is that they seem to – well, the weird thing, I think, is it seems like most of their scoring comes on the inside. You know, they're 53.9% from two, which is 61 in the nation. But yet somehow they're not very good at avoiding getting blocked, essentially. like they're probably one of the worst in the nation in terms of block percentage, which I find a little weird given how good they are from the inside. So it sounds like when they drive it inside, it's either they're getting blocked or they're making the bucket for the most part.
Well, I think that comes down to also, you know, you're two of the primary guys who are living in the paint are Alex Robinson, who is probably 5'11" and doesn't weigh more than, you know, like 175, 180 pounds. And Kendrick Davis, who is probably 5'8" and, you know, he's a pretty stocky 5'8". So he may be, you know, pushing 165 or something. But those are two guys that don't lack confidence whatsoever in size, but definitely lack ideal size of that position. So there's certainly there's a lot of balls getting swatted all over the gym.
To the freshman sophomore Frank Mason comp where he was just driving the lane with abandon and get blocked all the time.
Yeah, but the thing I appreciate about that is that, you know, most traditional point guards aren't driving the lane to score. You know, and Alex Robinson is certainly not driving the lane to score. Now, him being a lefty, which apparently for 3 years everybody in the Big 12 consistently forgets, which is kind of amazing. but that certainly helps. But when he's going, he's looking to dish it off. But what happens is a lot of times he leaves his feet. He doesn't know what else to do in that instance, or maybe the help defense rotates over quicker than he expected, and he ends up trying to put up a crazy shot, and it gets pushed back down in his face pretty hard. But you got to keep doing it. You know, you got to keep penetrating. You got to keep looking for opportunities. You have to keep looking like a threat to score. And if you get blocked, you know, 2 or 3 times, but you're able to create, you know, 10, 12 points on the others, it's to me, it's a big momentum play. It's a big crowd play, but it really isn't that much of a difference making play, especially when the majority of those blocks end up out of bounds and go right back to the offensive team. So it looked bad, but I don't know that it's as big of a negative as most people would tend to assume in those moments.
Yeah. The other thing looking at their team sheet here, it looks like they seem to have somewhat of an issue with turnovers. Although I believe most of that, at least recently, was driven by the horrible game they had against Baylor. And the Texas Tech. If I remember right, they had tons of turnovers in those two games, but for the most part, they've been pretty good. Is that just driven mainly by early season results, those two games?
So in the Baylor game, actually, I think it was the Baylor game, and I really should have this pulled up, but I believe they only had like 10 or 11 turnovers, which isn't disastrous. They were just so bad in every other regard, it didn't matter. And Baylor just never missed. I mean, Mekhi Mason, I think, he's hurt and still hitting threes against us. So it's just been kind of one of those scenarios where I think the biggest issue was once they lost Jalen Fisher, there was a massive adjustment period for that team, both on offense and defense. And there were a couple of games that looked pretty ugly in the box score when it came to turnovers, games that they won. And they had quite a few turnovers against Florida. They had a bigger than average turnover margin against Oklahoma State based off of the second half. And so there's just been some kind of a needing to find their sea legs with this new rotation. Kendrick Davis is a true freshman. You know, he turns it over a little bit. Lat Mayan has been a human turnover machine just because he's coming off of injury, just hasn't quite gotten into a groove yet. And so you've got a couple of players that they're trying to find roles for that don't have the experience and are a little more turnover prone. I think obviously when TCU plays well, it's games where Alex Robinson, Kendrick Davis maybe combined for four or five turnovers. When they're playing poorly, you know, A-Rob can have six turnovers himself. Those things happen. And with the way that defenses is really focused on collapsing on Robinson, that can lead to a lot of turnovers, which can completely change the complexion of the game. It hasn't been as big of a factor in, you know, I guess if you look at it, games where you'd expect them to not play as well at Texas Tech, that's obviously a tough environment, at Baylor, those are the games where the turnovers have been worse. But in those games that were winnable games, but maybe not games you expect them to win, they've been pretty consistently solid on that side of the ball.
Yeah, and actually, I mean, I'm looking and – yeah, they definitely seem to have some problems in those two particular games. But right, it was 13 turnovers against Texas Tech and only 9 against Baylor.
It was just a weird night.
Look like though in those particular games there was not a lot of possessions, which is probably helping to drive up the rates in those particular games. So it doesn't seem a lot when you talk about the actual raw numbers. But given the fact that TCU is probably one of the faster teams in terms of number of possessions in the Big 12, it does make it a pretty big number when they don't really get nearly as many possessions. All right, I do want to go ahead and turn my attention over to the actual game coming up. But before we do that, I am going to go ahead and throw it to a quick break. We will be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. All right, Melissa. So now that we're on this side of the break, I do want to turn our attention to the game itself. Obviously, this like we alluded to earlier, this is a completely different complexion for both of these teams from the first time that they met in Lawrence. Just a couple quick things to throw out here. You know, we talked about how TCU is probably one of the quicker teams in the conference. Kansas is as well. Kansas actually averages 69.9 possessions per game, whereas TCU averages just one full possession less. They're both in the top half of the nation, but the top three of the conference play, it looks like. So are we expecting this to be a high-scoring game, do you think?
You know, I would expect, but again, with all the things that have changed for both of these rosters here over the last several weeks, it feels like both teams have kind of wanted to slow it down a little bit, especially when you're coming into a game that's the second game in 3 days for both programs. So it's going to be interesting because I think the Frogs will look to make this a high-scoring game. I think that they'll, despite the fact that Kansas also plays a pretty fast style, I think their best bet is trying not to have to slow things down and score against the Jayhawks in the half court. They have not been nearly as effective offensively in that regard. And they got out and ran against Iowa State in a way that really gave them an advantage even at Hilton. So I'm thinking this is probably, you know, upper 70s, mid 80s kind of a game and that the Frogs will look to do a lot of inside outside playing on the offensive side of the ball, take advantage of their three-point shooting and hope to get some cheap, easy buckets in transition against the Jayhawks team that has really had their number forever, pretty much.
Yeah, so KenPom has us at a 75-74 TCU victory. So kind of right in the mid-70s.
Wait. Let me just
– Now, it is at 50%. So it's as close as you can possibly get at 75-74. So,
yeah,
but I mean, to be honest, I don't think I expect anything else, especially with the Jayhawks being on the road. You know, Kansas looks like a completely different team on the road. But The one part or the one area where they do seem to have a problem is getting their offense going. So while I would typically agree that it probably seems like both teams are going to try to push it to get their offense going, these are two very, very good defensive teams in general. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, TCU isn't in terms of – actually, I don't even think they're in the top half of the conference, but the conference as a whole is a very, very good defensive conference. So it's not like, you know, we're talking about actually, I'm looking right now. TCU has the 8th-ranked conference defense, but they are number 47 in the nation. So, the Big 12, I believe they have 6 of the top 25 defenses or something nationally, which is just absolutely ridiculous, especially given what we're used to with Big 12 football, you know, being offense and sure. No defense. So I think it's been a little weird. You know, I've talked with a few other people this year about how Big 12 games this year seem to be more like what we expect out of Big 10 games in the last few years. But I do think that's where the strength is for both of these teams, even with a team like Kansas missing their best defender in Marcus Garrett. He's going to be out with an injury still. It seems like TCU, especially recently, has been playing pretty good defense. And really a lot of the scoring has happened more towards the end of the game when things open up a little bit more. Are you worried, or what area, I think, defensively is your biggest concern going into this game?
Well, you know, I think it comes down to foul trouble. That's really what worries me more than anything, because instead of these games where teams have made big comebacks down the stretch, Oklahoma State and Florida both, you know, were handled easily in the first half and both were able to make runs. And that's what happens when, you know, Alex Robinson or Desmond Bain pick up a couple quick fouls, or Quatnoy has maybe 3 or 4 fouls with 10 minutes to go, and the Frogs just can't afford to not have one of their starters available. Kevin Samuels is a big part of that too. When he's not in foul trouble and he, you know, is a redshirt freshman, that's a confidence issue. If he picks up a quick foul, Jamie Dixon is taken to putting him on the bench pretty quickly after a whistle. And then he plays differently the rest of the game because he's just trying not to pick up that second foul. And, you know, as a big guy, like, you cannot be worried about getting in foul trouble. You can't play effectively around the rim if that's what you're focused on. So
does Jamie Dixon have the same 2 fouls in the first half and you sit for the rest of the half rule that Bill Self seems to not be able to get away from?
So not exactly. I think it depends on the player. Samuel was picking up 2 fouls in the first 4 minutes through most of November and December. And so with the adjustment that we saw Dixon make going into conference play was that he would play Samuel. The minute Samuel picked up his first foul, he'd come out. And then he'd let him sit for 2 or 3 minutes and think about it. And then he'd give him a little bit more rope to do it. He's picked up 3 fouls a couple of times in conference play. But I think that kind of catch your breath, look at the way the game is being whistled, you know, from the bench, that's really helped Samuel get in a little bit better of a rhythm. And so it's been less of an issue, but it still comes down to it sometimes. That and I think, too, the other thing that we've seen, TCU's fallen, I think, down the defensive ranks, mostly just based on what they allowed Texas Tech and Baylor to do against them, and that was 100% go off from three-point land. The Frogs have been a top 2 3-point defensive team in conference play all season long, and yet I think combined between the Tech and Baylor games, they allowed 26 three-pointers or something insane. So 15 to Baylor alone. So if Kansas is another team that they can get hot from outside, we've seen them make big timely threes, maybe not as consistently as they have in the past, but it's not for a lack of having guys that can hit that shot. So if they allow Kansas to have a career day from the 3-point line like they did Texas Tech and Baylor, then obviously that's an area of big concern. It also leads to long rebounds, which means it leads to long offensive rebounds for teams. And when the Frogs don't win the battle of the glass, they tend not to win the game. So those are probably the areas I'm really going to focus on, is can we keep Kevin Samuel and Desmond Bain and Alex Robinson out of foul trouble, and can TCU's guards out-rebound the Kansas guards in order to give the Frogs a rebounding advantage overall?
Yeah, and so when I'm looking at this game matchup here over on KenPom, I get a completely different story when I'm looking at conference-only numbers versus national numbers. Yeah. TCU, looks like a phenomenal defense around, you know, in general, other than the fact that their opponents seem to score free throws at will, which is not really something that they can, you know, really do anything about. But when you switch over to the in-conference numbers, you know, it tells a completely different story. They are the worst team in terms of conference play in allowing 2-point percentage at 54.8%. And yet they are the second best at 3-point percentage, even with those two games you're talking about against Texas Tech and Baylor. You know, they allow 32.5% of threes, good for number two in the conference. So, yeah. Whereas Kansas is kind of the flip side. They're the best team in terms of in the paint, and the second worst team out on the perimeter. I do think in Kansas's case, a lot of that is that they seem to have problems for whatever reason closing out on 3-point shooters.
Sure.
While, you know, typically there's not a lot you can do about 3-point percentage. Like the only thing you can do that affects how well your opponents shoot from 3-point range is whether they have an unguarded three completely or if they actually have to deal with some resistance to it. And so Kansas numbers look a lot worse, I think, because they've been very poor about getting out on open shooters. Whereas, you know, it's not been a case of where they have a guy in his face and he just makes it anyway. It's been, they don't even have a guy in his face. So yeah, he's going to make more of those. You know, so yeah, I'm looking in general, TCU seems to have really the only place that they excel is in blocking shots and stopping people from shooting threes. It looks like in terms of in the conference, which could potentially be an issue. I do think, though, that foul trouble is going to be an issue for both of these teams. Kansas, you know, as much as everybody likes to say that the refs are in Kansas' pocket, they have not been getting a very good whistle, especially on the road, which in a lot of ways is the way it should be. Like, you know, if there is going to be some sort of bias, it should be a little bit towards the home team, and it would make sense that it would be just because of the environment that you're in. Obviously, we would want a perfectly officiated game every single time, but we know that that's not likely.
What? In the Big 12?
Well, right. Especially in the Big 12. There's no way it's ever going to happen in the Big 12. There is a Big 12 refs Twitter account for a reason, right?
Yeah, very much so.
But I mean, you know, I think Kansas, where their troubles have been is that, you know, one, they haven't had nearly as much depth in terms of players playing well, especially on the road. They have guys get into foul trouble, and especially early, and it doesn't matter how good the player has been playing in the game. If he gets two fouls, he does not come back in for the rest of the first half. The only time I've ever seen Bill Self this year not do that, where he brought a guy back in who had two fouls, I forget which game it was exactly, but we had four big men that all had two fouls, and he had to bring somebody back in. So, you know, but the guy that he brought in, I believe, was Mitch Lightfoot, you know, a guy that is one of the better players. So it was more of a, we want to make sure we don't have two fouls going into three fouls going into the second half, rather than trying to play the game and, you know, kind of push whatever offensive advantage we had at the time.
Look, I was really hoping you weren't going to say those two words on this podcast, the Mitch Lightfoot words, because that is the guy that he's going to have 20 points Monday night. I guarantee, because that's what happens. Every team TC plays, some dude you had never heard of or you forgot was on the team or hasn't done anything all year long. When it's a big game like this, some dude comes up and goes off for 20. He's going to hit 6 or 7 3-pointers and a couple of just – I guarantee it's going to happen. Write it down.
But Mitch Lightfoot doesn't really shoot threes.
He's going to.
What he's going to do instead – what he's going to do instead is he's going to hit 4 or 5 fadeaway hook shots from like the middle of the floor. He's going to block 7 shots. He's going to have 7 blocks out of nowhere. Yep. Right. And he's going to hit that random. He's going to hit that random out of nowhere. Just, you know, I'm feeling it 3 that he shoots out of nowhere that everyone's going to say, no. Oh yes, it went in.
Yep. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, it seems though that Mitch is good for about 2 of those a season. And probably like 1 in conference play and 1 in non-conference. He kind of had that out of nowhere game against Oklahoma State. I do think part of that was just because they were down to, you know, they had to play somebody and he had, you know, someone had to step up and he happened to do it. I'm not saying it's not possible to happen against TCU. I don't know that it's likely though, just given how bad of a chance they've had. Sure. Now, granted, if Kansas wins on a buzzer beater, you know, it's going to be Mitch tipping it in at the very end, right?
100%.
But that's, so then my question for you is, who is the random guy who has no business shooting threes that's going to go off and make, you know, 5 or 6 threes against Kansas? Because it seems to happen every single game.
Yeah, we don't have that guy. The only guy it can be, like, if you legitimate, well, there's 2 scenarios that can happen. Number one, JD Miller, who we have not talked about yet, and that is a bad on my part because he is one of the 2 seniors on this team. He had the game winner against Oklahoma State. And one of those exact, why does he have the, oh my, no, he still has the ball. No pass. All right. Cool. Good job, JD. He had that moment Wednesday night. He is a guy that during the NIT run for TCU just became a deadly 3-point shooter from the baseline. Can't explain it. Don't know how it happened. Don't think it'll ever happen again. He has dialed his attempts way back this year, which is a great thing. We are all very happy to see him shoot less from outside because he's such a good interior player. He's the guy that could go and hit four three-pointers, though, Monday night. And the other one would be Lat. He's been described in the preseason and the offseason as being the best pure shooter on the team, and he just has not found his stroke. If he can get on the floor and not make the immediate mistake that gives him a hook, he's a guy that could certainly be a difference maker from outside. But it's really going to come down to Quatnoy and Desmond Bane. If those guys shoot, 50% on a combined 9 or 10 attempts, then TCU is in a really, really good spot Monday night for sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was looking at your guys' team page to see who it would be. And, typically it seems like we've actually three times this year we've gone and looked at the team page, Fetch and I, who does the podcast with me normally, and we pick a guy who has probably about a 25% three-point clip this year and never fails. We're like, he's going to go off, and he does. And it's usually it's like 6 of 7 or something ridiculous like that. I can't count how many times I've heard the comment, he's come out of nowhere shooting threes today. And actually you had mentioned, I went back and looked at Miller's career stats from three. Looks like last year he's already shot 56 this year and made 13 of them for a 232 clip, which makes him obviously the perfect candidate this year.
Yes, just go he's preserved. The guy.
But last year he only shot 61 for the entire year.
So
he hasn't really dialed it back any this year. The previous year he shot almost 100. So he definitely has dialed it back this year and last year compared to that. But the pace he's going right now, he's probably going to get into the 85 or 90 range.
He's just shooting them at better times than he did previously.
Either that, or when he's shooting them poorly, he's shooting the same time that other people are shooting poorly. And so you maybe just don't notice
it. It's all disguise. That could be.
But I can pretty much guarantee it sounds like Mitch Lightfoot's going to have 7 blocks and JD Miller's going to make 6 threes. So
perfect. I will take that trade.
Right, exactly. We'll see which out of character performance is going to lead to the winner. So obviously we haven't talked too much about the Kansas side of the ball. Who is it on Kansas that really worries you in this matchup?
I mean, at the end of the day, Kansas always has great players, right? Like, obviously, they're recruiting, 4 and 5-star guys. They're developing them successfully. But I think when TCU has played Kansas, it's very rarely been about the individual players. I think they're still trying to get over the Kansas name on the jersey. It's still hard to beat Kansas. It's still hard for TCU to believe that they are the type of team that is capable of playing with the Kansas Jayhawks because of what that program represents long term and in the Big 12 long term. So
you mean they didn't take part from the Topeka YMCA game? Oh my god! I think if there's any year to be able to get over the hump on that, it probably seems like it would be this year. This Kansas team, regardless of how talented the individual players are, how good the scheme typically is, they just don't seem to be gelling very well. That seems to have picked up at least a little bit in the last few games with Ochai Agbaji coming off the bench. He had his red shirt pulled, which
against TCU, right?
I believe it was against. Yeah, I believe that the TCU game was his first game, and he has made everybody wonder why he was redshirted. Actually, it was kind of funny. The comments in the post-game press conference from the Oklahoma State game, Bill Self said, we went ahead and pulled his redshirt, showing that that was the stupidest decision I've ever made, was deciding to redshirt him in the first place. So
he looked great against TCU. He was that guy that, I think he only had 6 points, but he had the two big alley-oops. He was just an athlete that was a difference maker, even if it didn't show up on the box score. The other guy, obviously, and this is the easy answer, is Lawson.
Of course.
He's just such a tough matchup for TCU. JD Miller had a really tough time containing him in the first matchup. If they can just hold him to his average and not let anybody else beat them, then I think that's a recipe for success. But a 6'9" dude like that who is so big and so strong and still really, really athletic, the Frogs just really struggled to have an answer from it. He went off for 30 plus, I think, in that first matchup. If they can't contain him between Miller and Kevin Samuel, then it's going to be a long night for TCU. That and whatever random guy decides to have a big game, like we were talking about earlier, whether it's Mitch Lightfoot or whoever else, that seems to always be the way that TCU loses these games, is the star goes off for a big game, and then somebody else steps up and puts up an 18 spot behind him, and that's what I worry about Monday night.
Yeah, I mean, I think the underrated portion of DJ's game right now is the fact that he is really heated up from three. The last few games he's been knocking down threes at a much better rate. He's up to 34% on the year, which, you know, he was a 35% shooter his first year at Memphis and kind of cooled down a little bit, so people didn't really expect it, but he's kind of developing now that 3-point range, at least good enough to be, you know, like what you would need a big man to be in like the NBA. So obviously, it's a small trend. He's going to have to continue it to really be able to say that he has that game, but it's definitely been better than it has been. I do think that the two guys that are going to step up, it's either obviously Lawson or Ochai Agbaji. He's been playing a whole lot better recently. There have been huge stretches now where he looks like far and away the best player on the team. He brings the most energy. He does the most just all around. He's a good 3-point shooter. You know, he's been getting a ton of rebounds. Just all over the place. So it seems like every time there's a good play for Kansas recently, he is somehow involved in it.
I would imagine we're going to get a lot of him and Desmond Bane matched up on each other Monday
night.
Yeah,
that would be fantastic.
Because those are two very similar players and what they bring from an athletic standpoint and a hustle standpoint and energy standpoint. So that should be a really, really fun matchup. If Lawson is shooting the three at a good clip, JD Miller can have a really long night. The other guy that I guess could do some work on him is Quat Noy, who's a 6'9 guy himself, but just doesn't have the weight to just stay with the physicality of Lawson. And that's going to be an interesting defensive decision for Jamie Dixon.
Yeah, it's going to definitely be interesting. All right, well, we'll go ahead and finish up here. What is your prediction for how the game is going to go?
I mean, at the end of the day, if TC wants to be the program that they're building towards becoming, this is one of those games you have to go out and win. The crowd has to be frothing at the mouth. Everyone has to be yelling and screaming and angry the whole time. The team has to be fired up. They have to recover and get their legs back under them quickly. If the Frogs want to be and probably not winning the Big 12 this year, just they dug themselves in too big of a hole. But if they want to be a Big 12 contender, they want to be an NCAA second weekend tournament team, it starts with getting a win on Big Monday in your house. They have to do it. And so I do think they'll find a way. I think the Frogs have turned the corner a little bit. I think the energy of the game winner against Oklahoma State and what they did at Iowa State can carry them through to get this critical Big 12 win over a Kansas team that 99% of the time has been able to knock them out in these moments. And so it's going to be close. It's going to be a bated breath kind of situation in the last couple of seconds probably, but I think TCU pulls it off. I'm going to go 71-69 TCU.
Yeah, I've struggled a lot with this game, and I'm probably going to change my mind about three more times between now and when the game actually tips off. But, given the fact that Kansas has so many problems on the road, like I could see this game, TCU comes out, gets a big lead and never looks back. I don't think though we're going to have a Texas type game where, you know, Kansas gets punched in the mouth and claws back to single digits, but really can't do much more. They seem to have a little bit better. And it's only been one game without LeGerald Vick, but even with him gone, you hate to lose the 3-point threat that he is. But it seems like the cohesiveness of the team, partly because everybody has to step up. But it seemed to be a little bit better. I don't know how much of that was playing against Oklahoma State as opposed to, you know, playing against a team like Kansas State or Texas. So I guess we will see a little bit about that. But the other thing too is that if I've learned anything in the Big 12 this year, it's the fact that you have absolutely no idea what one game means about the next. It seems like TCU's turned the corner. It seems like Kansas might finally be getting onto solid footing. But the Big 12 has, you know, their own ideas about how, and I'm not talking about like the conference, but it just I'm not talking about the conference officials, but the conference just in general. You seem to think you know how a team is going to be, and then they completely turn everything on its head. So I do expect this to be a very close game. I could see either team getting on a roll and making it a laugher at some point. But ultimately, I think it's going to be really, really close. It's going to be a defensive game early, I think, and then the offense are going to find their footing. I do think they'll probably score a little bit more than you do. I think probably in the like 78, 77 range. So ultimately I do think that TCU pulls it off, and I'm not just going for the reverse jinx here. I just still don't trust this team on the road. I will say TCU 78, KU 76. So,
and I will 100% guarantee you TCU is going to jump out to a big lead. They're going to be up double digits at the half, and Kansas will be within one possession with less than 10 minutes to go.
Yeah, I say the same thing about KU all the time as well.
We have let some really bad teams back into basketball games this year, and I don't expect Monday night to be any different.
Yeah, I think I've seen three games this year where Kansas has led by 15 and trailed by 15 in the same game. So,
yep, that sounds about right.
This is going to be a roller coaster, I think, for both teams. We were chatting just a little bit before we got on here, and I think you were talking about how you were just hoping for a really good environment with a big Monday and everything. And I said it's going to be absolutely perfect for you guys until Kansas tips in a buzzer beater and ruins the night for you. So hopefully that happens. But you know, if it doesn't, I'm not going to be too upset. This has been a crazy conference this year, and while Kansas probably needs this one to really stay in serious contention for the crown, just with how much everybody's beating each other up. I'm not only worried about what a loss here does, but I'm also not necessarily too worried just because of how much the conference will beat each other up. So,
there's going to be some serious cannibalization down the line. I mean, a week ago we thought Baylor was a lock to be the ones to break the streak, and 2 weeks before that it was Texas Tech, and now we're looking at a world where Kansas State might have the inside track to be the new Big 12 champions, and I just don't know what to think about any of this.
Yeah, it's funny because Kansas State and Texas Tech right now are both projected to finish 12-6 in the conference, according to Ken Pom, with Iowa State and Kansas State at 11-7 right behind. I believe yesterday at one point there was five teams that were all projected to finish 11-7 at the top of the conference. So who knows what's going to happen here? It's absolutely ridiculous.
It's
going to be a fantastic rest of the year. So Melissa, thank you so much for joining me today. Where can the people find you online?
You can find me at The Coach Melissa on Twitter, and of course, all of our great TCU coverage at www.frogsofwar.com.
All right. Thanks again, Melissa. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks. All right.
And that'll do it for today's episode. Big thanks to Melissa for joining us today. Really, really great interview. Made it a little easier, I think, to access this game that we're having coming up tonight. So, action that we've seen since the last time we had a podcast. The softball team dropped, unfortunately, all five games that they had this weekend, out in Kajikawa. It was not a very good weekend for them, unfortunately. They lost against number 25 Oregon 5-14, lost to Stanford 3-12 in five innings. Then on Saturday they lost, at number 12 Arizona State 6-14 in five innings. They lost to Utah 4-6, and then on Sunday, unfortunately, they lost to Missouri 2-3. In a game that I thought that they were going to get, that they just weren't able to pull out. Other action that we had this weekend, the track and field team was all over the place. They had the Iowa State Classic. Then they also had the Tyson Invitational down in Arkansas. The swimming and diving team was at Iowa State. They won that meet 201.5 to 93.5, so they had a really convincing victory down there. The women's basketball team lost to Texas at home 73-91. So all in all, other than the fact that the KU men's basketball team won 84-72, it was not a very good weekend for results for the Kansas Athletics. So unfortunately, sometimes it just happens, and hopefully, you know, we get some good results coming up this week. So obviously the game tonight against TCU, which we just got done talking about. And then Wednesday night, the women's basketball team goes to Oklahoma at 7 p.m. It's on Fox Sports Oklahoma or the Jayhawk Radio Network. If you have the opportunity to go ahead and listen to that. Other action, we will have another podcast before then. So there's more action this weekend in terms of track and field. Softball's back in action. Baseball starts on Friday as well. So definitely look forward to all of that. And Kansas men's basketball is basically off. Well, I'm sorry. They're not Monday being their midweek game. So they will play again when they host West Virginia this Saturday. We'll have plenty of more coverage of that game later this week. We're gonna recap all three games at some point this week when we get Fetch on the podcast. And then we'll go ahead and take a look at the West Virginia game coming up. So, A big thank you guys for listening. If you haven't already, please do find us on iTunes, rate, subscribe, you know, 5 stars, nice comments, all that fun stuff. It does help to get the podcast out there to make it so more people can listen, more people can see what we're doing here. We really do appreciate all the input that you guys give us. If you haven't already, you can contact us on Twitter at RockChalkPod. The email address is rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com. We're loving the new home we have here on the Rock Chalk Talk podcast channel. I'm definitely looking to build that out for you guys. So if you have any suggestions there as well, definitely feel free to contact us about that. So once again, I will go ahead and leave it there. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.